You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
So proud for the last 16 years we have been able to marshal such a stellar parade of guests to you every Saturday evening. Truly, there is no other show like ours. Nobody but TPC will give you the message you are hearing tonight on this radio network. Welcome back to the program, James Edwards and Keith Alexander. In the first hour, you heard from former member of European Parliament Nick Griffin, always a big hit with this particular audience, and he was, of course, giving us his perspective on the American presidential election as he sees it from across the pond. Last week, you heard, of course, from Greg Johnson of Countercurrents and Sam Dixon. And, you know, it just so happened last Sunday, I was watching a Countercurrents broadcast that featured Sam Dixon and our next guest, Mark Weber, who has made more appearances on this show than any other guest in 2020. 2020 has been a year to remember, and one of the reasons I'll remember it is because of the many times Mark appeared on this show. He's been appearing with us for, since our inception, and we're always better off for it. I want to welcome him back. Of course, Mark is the director of the Institute for Historical Review. He's an accomplished historian, a lecturer, a current affairs analyst par excellence. He's an author, educated in the United States and Europe. He holds a master's degree in modern European history. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you very much, James. As always, it's great to be on, especially in a year as roller coaster tumultuous as 2020 has been.
And you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, right,
maybe not. Oh, my goodness.
That's right. Yeah.
and it's still not settled, that's for sure, which is, of course, why we're bringing you back. Well, Mark, because of COVID, I guess you could say, in some ways, you've been able to make more regular appearances than normal. I mean, we always feature you, I don't know, at least quarterly, I would say, two or three, four times a year. You've been appearing almost monthly this year and to the benefit of our audience. But I saw you on the stream last week with Greg and Sam, and I sent you an email. I said, if you can bottle up your commentary and deliver the exact same message, we couldn't make for a better hour than that. So take it away, Mark.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, James. You're very, very kind. Of course, it's always, I admire very much what you're doing. It's very important, particularly as I think the year 2020 has shown just how rare oases of truth or realism there are in the United States, including this show, among all the fury and nonsense that we have in the mainstream media. And if there's anything that comes out of this year, as shown by public opinion polls and by the voting, it's the understandable and justifiable huge distrust that the American people increasingly have of the mainstream media. And it's all the more important under those circumstances, under these conditions, that, as I call them, oases of realism, like this political cesspool, are available for people who are out looking for it.
Well, thank you so much for those kind words as well.
Right, Mark, there's an alternative reality out there. It's like two people, if you are adept at navigating the internet and you listen to radio, you'll hear our message. If you don't, if you just turn on the TV screen, you hear a totally different message, and none of the never the twain shall meet between them. I mean, this is it's incredible. And if you listen to the TV, for example, you're going to be very, very discouraged about Trump's prospects. But I'm not. I think that he's serious about this, and I think he knows that they're playing for keeps. He either is going to be president or he's going to jail.
Well, let's just cut to the chase, Mark. I mean, I think Mark might have a dissenting opinion on that. I am somewhere in the middle. I'd like to my heart wants to believe. My head tells me it's over. Keith is a little more optimistic. Mark, where do you fall in the whole gamut of what Trump's doing right now and why is he doing it?
Just the other day, I listen when I drive into the office in the morning. I listen to NPR. I listen to Rush Limbaugh. Basically, those two are my sources in the morning I listen to. And the person who was substituting for Rush Limbaugh was talking about how he couldn't believe that Trump could lose. He made the point that in the weeks and months before the election, Trump had much bigger rallies, more enthusiasm, far more spirit, and just far more people out supporting him than Joe Biden. And I was put off by that because the enthusiasm of rallies and the spirit of the support for Trump is not at all any indication of how he will do in the campaign, in the election. And I would remind people that, for example, during the primaries, both in 2016 and just recently, Bernie Sanders' rallies were larger and far more enthusiastic than those of either Hillary Clinton or Biden. And I remember in 1964, the rallies of Goldwater were bigger and more enthusiastic, more spirited than those of Lyndon Johnson. And going back even further, in 1896, William Jennings Bryan barnstormed the country, spoke all across the country to very large and enthusiastic crowds. William McKinley didn't leave his home. He would occasionally come out to the front porch of his house and say a few words. He didn't even campaign, but he won. He got 51-52% of the vote. William Jennings Bryan got 46-48%.
That was done in the before the era of mail-in ballots too.
Well, okay, but the point is that people have a natural tendency to think that the team or the candidate they're supporting is going to win. And I was on election day, I was on a radio broadcast, and every person except me who were supporters of Trump thought Trump was going to win. Well, I was far more, because what strikes me so much is how many Trump supporters are unable to grasp just how many millions of people in America have scorn and contempt for Trump. I'm not saying it's justified or not justified, but that's the reality. And I wasn't surprised that Biden, I think by at least most standards, has gotten more votes than Trump. And I was astonished.
Well, you know, Mark, up until about 1 o'clock in the morning, I was following the returns, and it seemed as if Trump was on his way to victory. Then it's like the day the earth stood still, and then when you come back at 4 o'clock in the morning, suddenly Biden has pulled ahead.
Well, of course, the media is saying that that's because of the mail-in ballots.
That doesn't mean anything. That's happened many times in elections. Somebody seems ahead. You know, there's a famous photograph from 1948 showing Harry Truman holding up a copy of the early edition of the Chicago Tribune and announces Dewey beats Truman because the early returns favor Dewey. Truman pulled ahead and ultimately won. That's happened many times in elections, and it happens even more.
You don't think that has anything to do with the mail-in ballots and chicanery then, in other words?
Look, there's no disputing that election fraud has characterized many elections in U.S. history. That was the case in 1960. It's pretty widely acknowledged that the Democrats were able to flip Illinois over to the Democrats, probably through election fraud in Illinois. But it wasn't enough to change the outcome, and that's why Nixon didn't challenge it and didn't try to pursue it in the courts.
Mark, my friend, hang on right there. You're on fire already. We're just getting started. We'll be right back.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
You can support the work of Mark Weber and his Institute for Historical Review at IHR.org, and we would encourage you to do that. One of the reasons we love having Mark on so frequently is because his commentary and analysis of current affairs is like a warm knife through butter. I knew what Mark was going to say, or had a good idea, because I'd watched his commentary on a similar program asking similar questions last week. And we want to give you that balance. We want to give you that balance. Greg Johnson, obviously, is of a different opinion, that there was so much widespread fraud that it changed it. And we had Greg on last week to present that commentary. So I don't like repeating myself in the same program. I repeat myself each week, but normally not the same program. But I want to bring this to Mark's attention and then ask him to consult his oracle and tell us how he sees this playing out over the next few days. So this was, I guess you could say, Mark, a collection of recent events, and we'll go through them very quickly. So you have Rudy Giuliani saying that the campaign has the evidence to change the Pennsylvania election. This is Rudy Giuliani, Trump's lawyer, of course, former mayor of New York. The president appointed a new Secretary of Defense. Of course, as we know, and we mentioned this in the first hour, the Secretary of Defense, the second in command of the military, behind only Trump himself. Why change that appointment if it's only going to be for a couple of weeks? We also have, what else do we have? We have the Supreme Court, made up now of six justices who have been scorned personally by Biden. You had Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett as young attorneys being dispatched to Florida to investigate the vote fraud in the Bush versus Gore fiasco, or at least the vote inconsistencies the vote dispute.
In the year 2000.
Dispute. Yes, of course. They're doing a hand recount in Georgia. Accusations in several contested states. Bill Kristol saying now he's getting nervous. He doesn't know what Trump's going to do. So on and so forth, all the way down the line. So, you know, when Trump says he is telling federal agencies to proceed with plans for his administration's budget for the next fiscal year, either all of this is real in their minds or they're giving Baghdad Bob a run for his money. So that's the question I asked Nick Griffin. That's the question I asked Keith Alexander. That's the question I now ask you, Mark. There's, to me, one of three things going on here. Either Trump and his consiglieres believe they have a path to stay in the White House, or they're just trying to fundraise, or they're just trying to stick it to Biden and make the transition as difficult as possible. Which one is it?
Trump has a long record of acting as if he believes what he says, even when it's not true. Trump has, throughout his administration, made numerous claims and predictions, and it didn't work out. Trump may believe that he really won. He may believe that he's going to win the courts. I don't know. But, and he may be taking actions as if he is absolutely convinced he'll prevail in the courts, and keeping faith with supporters who believe the election was stolen. But that doesn't change the reality. Donald Trump, I remember him saying, "Oh, this big wall is going to be built, and Mexico's will be paying for it. Don't even think about it," he said. Well, okay, here we are 4 years later, and there's a little tiny wall.
Touché.
I mean, there were numerous statements he made. He was going to, in 2016, he was going to get the federal deficit eliminated. He was going to, I remember in April, the coronavirus, back in March or April, he said, coronavirus, COVID-19, it'll be over by Easter, he said. I mean, there's just endless things, and Trump may believe these things. Who knows? It doesn't matter because, I mean, it'll all get sorted out one way or the other. He'll either win in the courts or he won't. But here's the big point. If the system is as corrupt as Donald Trump and I think all of us will agree is very corrupt, then we have to look beyond this. We have to draw the inevitable lesson from all of this that saving what is important is not possible in a system this skewed and this corrupt as it is. I mean, it doesn't matter particularly about the election fraud. It's a larger fraud. There's a constant underlying fraud. When CNN, for example, or NPR tells people that the fact that blacks are arrested at a higher rate than whites, that that's proof of systemic racism and something fundamentally wrong with the American people, or certainly white America, that's basically a lie. It's wrong. The deceit and the misrepresentation is on a much more fundamental level than screwing with this election or that particular thing. There's a fundamental problem. The fundamental problem are bigger lies that even Republicans tend to applaud. Statements like Bill Clinton's statement that diversity is our greatest strength. That a diverse society is somehow stronger than one that's unified and coherent. That's a fundamental lie. And when people make policy based on false premises like that, the results are going to be inevitably catastrophic. And that's what we're seeing. In other words, the deceit, the misrepresentation, the distortion, the lack of realism is on a much more fundamental basis than this or that topical problem that might arise.
Yeah, what I was going to say about that, Mark, is that the whole mail-in ballot scenario is part of this big lie. It has a racial component to it. Apparently, in the eyes of the Democrats and in the eyes of a lot of black political leaders, black people just can't discipline themselves to show up at a particular place, the polling place, at a particular date, sometime between 8 in the morning and 7 at night, and therefore you have to have alternative ways of voting to accommodate their weaknesses in that regard, such as mail-in voting, such as early voting. Anytime you try to reduce the length of time for early voting or have some type of reasonable safeguards for mail-in voting, you're going to be accused of being a racist. And that is part of what's happened right here. Because of that, plus COVID as the great excuse as to why people would be legitimately afraid to come into a public place and vote, therefore we need even more and should expect more mail-in voting. It was just setting us up for massive voter fraud.
Well, and to Mark's point, and he's right, he talked about the Kennedy election, the Chicago chicanery, and how it was obviously, apparently anyway, fraudulent, but not enough to turn the election. Pat Buchanan wrote an article about this, I think a time or two ago.
But see, this is much larger than that, though. This is not one state.
Well, we don't know.
And it's not Richard Daley's political machine in Chicago. This seems to be in most every what you would call battleground state that they've had this type of thing. And there seems to be a lot of this much smoke. There's got to be fire somewhere.
Maybe. So that's the question again to Mark Weber is, I mean, certainly there may be some fraud. Is it enough to turn an election in any state, much less a couple or three states that Trump would need to flip?
Four or five or eight.
Well, it may be. It may not be. We don't know. At some point, he's going to have to show his cards, Mark. Concede or win. I mean, well, he has alleged things, but we haven't actually seen, you know, all of the documents, all of the evidence. We've seen affidavits. We've seen lawsuits that are just getting blown out of court. Maybe he can go to the Supreme Court and get a favorable opinion. But how do you? I guess your opinion is as good as anyone's, Mark, on this. Probably a little more informed than most. I mean, certainly a little more informed than most. But we're just taking a stab in the dark to ask how this thing plays out in the next couple of weeks. But what would you say? At some point, he's either going to have to win or leave the White House, and which one's going to happen first?
Well, I for a man who said that he was going to win, and the only way he could lose was through voter fraud before the election even took place, is a man who is going to be very difficult to convince that he lost the election no matter what, because if he said and believed that even before the election took place, he's going to have a hard time accepting it. He may even have personal reasons why he doesn't want to accept losing the election. But I want to try to make a bigger point about coming to grips with the demographic trends that are already in place and that are moving against anybody like Trump anyway, whether it's in 2020, 2016, or 2024. That's the important
thing. Hold right there. Keep that thought in mind. We'll visit it right after the break.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The United States set a new record Friday with more people hospitalized for COVID-19 than at any other time during the pandemic. More than 68,000 Americans are currently hospitalized, with states in the Midwest and West taking the biggest hits. A record number of new cases were reported Friday as well, with more than 177,000 new cases reported. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum issued an executive order Friday night to mandate mask wearing and limiting the size of gatherings in his state. That makes North Dakota the 35th state to issue a mask-wearing mandate. Europe is also struggling with a surge in COVID cases, with more countries introducing restrictions to try to contain the virus. Austria will clamp down on the partial lockdown that the country is already in, closing schools and non-essential stores this coming Tuesday. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz is encouraging his country to meet no one for the next 4 weeks. This is USA Radio News.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who've agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-460-1663. That's 1-800-460-1663. Again, 1-800-460-1663.
There are renewed signs that shoppers are beginning to load up their pantries as cases of COVID-19 continue to soar. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has more.
Consumers are beginning to stockpile their provisions amid fears of another shutdown. I spoke to industry expert Colin Stewart of the national sales and marketing agency Acosta, who tells us the grocery supply chain is better equipped now if there is another shutdown.
The biggest challenge with the supply chain is the fluctuations that are happening. The supply chain in this industry was really built to be more of a just-in-time type of a supply chain. And when we have these big spikes in demand, yeah, I think that's one of the biggest challenges, is just suppliers have a hard time reacting quickly to some of the big fluctuations that we're seeing.
For the USA Radio Network, I'm John Clemens.
Dustin Johnson holds a solid four-stroke lead after three rounds at the Masters, shooting a 65 on Saturday. Three players are tied right behind him in second at 12 under. This is USA Radio News.
Oh, yeah, oh.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Ladies and gentlemen, our featured guest this hour is the one and only Mark Weber, director of the Institute for Historical Review. As I said in the studio at this very moment, I am on his website, IHR.org. Mark was about to make a very important point before the break, and we want to give him all the time he needs to get to it. But first, we have a caller on the line who is a professor of political science who specializes in the United States government. And he has told us that we might want to make use of his specialized knowledge regarding the current election chaos. He says there is very little accurate information about what is now happening and what is about to happen, and he wants to briefly appear on the show right now to shed some light on the confusion, and we'd like to welcome him just to give him just a couple of minutes, and then we'll get Mark's response to what he's about to share. So, sir, welcome to the program. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Hello, James and Keith. It's an honor to be on with you again. As a political scientist, I can say my skills lead me to think that the left is indeed trying to steal this election. And here are some ways to stop the steal and understand what's about to unfold. Option A, demanding recounts to expose the fraud. I was initially in favor of this route, but now realize that the leftists were expecting this. In fact, recounts could work against us. Acting corrupt election officials to simply run fraudulent ballots through the machines a second time will likely change nothing. In fact, it will appear to confirm the validity of the first fraudulent count. They will say, see, we gave you your recount, and it changed nothing, so shut up. The only exceptions here will be that ballots previously counted multiple times might be nullified. Or better yet, we can have the flawed Dominion software exposed. Yeah, going after the Dominion or the Hammer computer programs are the best bets here, but beyond my area of specialization. Option B, Republican legislatures can step in by a number of routes, such as getting a truly independent recount or certifying Republican slates for the Electoral College electors in defiance of fraudulent counts presented to them. But this will all be gummed up in the courts. There might not be enough time for this option. So option C, contest the Electoral College in Congress. It looks like the Senate will be under Republican control and the House under Democratic control when they convene to count the Electoral College votes. Under the 12th and 20th Amendments, the House chooses the president and the Senate chooses the vice president if the Electoral College can't agree on a majority. But the House must vote by state caucus, each state having only one vote. And this one vote is selected by a majority vote of each state's delegation in the House. And it looks to be next January, Republicans will have 26 or 27 delegations and Democrats around 21 or 22. And this is one of the numbers that's often been misreported. And with a couple of state delegations deadlocked in a tie. So one might think, all right, 26 Republicans to 21 Democrat delegations, an easy victory. But not so fast, since a majority of all states, 26, are needed to choose the president. So if the Republicans control 26 delegations next January, that is a razor-thin margin. And as we know, razor-thin margins are subject to dirty tricks. Also, the leftists know that they look to lose in this House election option. And I guarantee they have a plan to get around it. Their plan probably was to just adjourn the House and thereby prevent a House delegation election entirely. But they can't adjourn for more than 3 days without the Senate's concurrence, and they won't control the Senate until January 20th at the earliest. Hence, arcane parliamentary procedures and Supreme Court may decide House adjournment possibilities. Alternately, the Democrats might try contesting electoral slates on January 6th and thereafter, but Vice President Pence will be the chairman of the count, and he will unlikely agree to the fraudulent Democrat electoral slates. His decisions might be appealed to the Supreme Court, but now the Democrats fear a post-Ginsburg court will side with Trump. If they can paralyze the House, their backup plan might be to also paralyze the Senate. Of course, Republicans will control the Senate in early January, but the Democrats can deny quorum, meaning the Senate cannot pick a vice president who would act as president, meaning the Speaker of the House becomes acting president. Such congressional paralysis might thus mean we get an acting president and acting commander-in-chief, Nancy Pelosi. Option D, the Supreme Court. This is where the election will probably be decided. There might not be time for the High Court to remedy voter fraud. However, the court is likely to address unconstitutional state court decisions that changed election rules, particularly in Pennsylvania. If reports are true that Pennsylvania officials have ignored Justice Alito's order for late-arriving ballots to be stored and counted separately, the court will almost certainly intervene because they hate being disrespected. In conclusion, perhaps the most important fact, though, is Justice Thomas and Kavanaugh. They were both savaged in their confirmation hearings by Senators Biden and Harris, who painted them as sexual perverts. They will likely relish the payback of canceling the steal of this election. In sum, Trump's best hopes lie with the SCOTUS and the House.
Listen, I want to thank you for calling in and offering that insight. For obvious reasons, we're not going to mention your name or the location of the university at which you teach, but we thank you for your insights, and I'd like to now turn it over to Mark Weber. Mark, your reaction to that?
Well, his analysis is, of course, very detailed and shows a lot of thought. It's really in two parts. One is he's analyzing the reality that we're dealing with right now, and the second part, the lengthier part, was about what might happen, what could happen, what possibilities exist to try to deal with this. But it seems, first and foremost, that already what he says, and I think all of us can agree from different points of view, the system is already so corrupt, it's already so skewed that we should really think beyond this, especially given the trajectory, the trends of the last years make it clear that even if Trump were to win this election in 2020, the demography is such that the United States of America is increasingly becoming like California. That is, a country in which somebody like Trump or a conservative or something just simply can no longer be elected. That's the direction it's going on, and it's one of the reasons why so many Trump supporters are motivated by fear that this is the last opportunity there exists even to have somebody like him elected. Now, the rest of the point he makes about what could happen and so forth, I find that very hard to believe because it would mean, in effect, repudiating the trajectory of more than a century, the trends of the patterns of more than a century, which basically say the election is going to be decided by vote, not by the House of Representatives, or by the Senate, or by the Supreme Court. I mean, it's very, very difficult to believe that any more than one or two states would say, we're going to make a decision about the election apart from what our state officials have said the vote count is in our particular state. So, I mean,
what about 2000, Mark?
I'm sorry?
What about 2000?
That was only with regard to one state. That was with regard to Florida. The Supreme Court dealt with only one state, and that was a very, very thin margin there, and it was a very, very specific issue. He's talking about a Supreme Court decision on a very vast nationwide level that would be it's a different thing. In fact, the Supreme Court was voting only on the certification of votes in Florida. It didn't vote on whether in a situation which the whole thing went over to the Congress and then went to the Supreme Court as our guest just tried to outline. It's just very hard to believe that would happen. I mean, it could happen, but the bigger point is...
Mark, the other thing on this, though, is that in 2000, voter fraud or electoral fraud was not part of the equation then. It was just counting votes. We have, and also there's a legal doctrine that when you have fraud, it vitiates your ability to benefit from it, which
right.
might be used by the Supreme Court to say that if you were behind, if the Democratic Party, if Biden and Harris were part of this fraudulent scheme in on it, that they are forfeited, they forfeit their right to serve as president and vice president.
Yeah, that could be, but the analysis given by this professor is really in two parts. One of them is the sort of administrative or mechanical way in which Republicans could win in the House or so forth, and the other is a court ruling on fraud. Those are two separate things. A court can rule on fraud and make the a judgment on the basis you're talking about, but that's a different thing than what he was talking about.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you, we are trying to have the most in-depth debate and discussion, kicking over every rock that we can, and this is an interesting discussion. The fact of the matter is, nobody knows how it's going to turn out, but we will find out soon, and until then, we'll give you the best food for thought we can provide. We'll be right back.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine. The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Mark Weber, the director for the Institute of Historical Review, is our guest this hour, our featured guest, IHR.org. I never like to take time away from a guest who has been booked in advance, but because this situation is evolving in real time, because it could be over tomorrow or it could drag out in a long and bitter battle that goes all the way up to the Supreme Court, I thought it was prudent to bring on the professor to hear from him. And I think that he added value and certainly some profound food for thought. But, Mark, I know you had many more points to make, and it seems as though an hour with you always flies by far too quickly. I could say that about a lot of guests, but it is certainly true with you. And we have only one segment remaining and still much to get to, I'm sure.
Well,
so go ahead.
The big point I would try to make is it's important people have hope, but the hope has to be based on realism. America is changing. It's declining. Its cultural standards have fallen. Those trends are entrenched. They're not going to change rapidly. And it's, I think, delusional to think that one man or one election roll of the dice is going to turn that around, because these trends have been anchored in place for at least 50 years or 60 years or 70 years. That's why we have to look really at fundamentals and not pin our hopes on transitory things or things that come up which seem like an easy fix, when the problems are so entrenched and so fundamental that only very, very serious and I think very fundamental changes required is the only way to really turn things around. Again, I mean, even if Trump were to be reelected now or go back into office and he comes back into 4 years, what about 4 years from now or 8 years from now? The trends are obviously running in a very different direction. The United States of America is becoming, with each passing year, ever more like California. Our cities are becoming more and more like Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles. That's the overall trend. And Donald Trump and even the Republican Party, whatever, are not going to change that fundamental thing. Both parties.
Okay, Mark, this is Keith. Let me chime in on this, though. Something has happened that I don't even know that Trump designed, but it works in our favor. Immigration from Latin America has gone down drastically in the last several years. It seems that we've developed a kind of strategy now, or a gambit, where the Mexican government is, in order for not getting too tough on their illegal immigrants to us, they're keeping the immigrants from the rest of Latin America from getting to America by stopping them in Mexico. And, you know, sometimes God's hand works in these things in ways that we're not predicting. And, you know, I think there's been a, you know, I would not have imagined that this, you know, decline in Hispanic immigration to America would have occurred. And I was just like you saying, you know, where's the wall? But apparently it's better to have a buffer zone in Mexico than to have the wall, possibly.
Okay, that may be. If all immigration stopped tomorrow, legal and illegal, the basic demographic trends would still be in place in America. I mean, my bigger point is to look at the larger picture. It's not tweaking this or that particular thing. Donald Trump himself has said many times he wants to welcome lots of immigration from around the world as long as it's legal. I mean, yeah, things can be good or positive in a short-term way with regard to this or that particular issue, but the overall problem is really fundamental. And more fundamentally than that, the Republican Party and Donald Trump embraces a kind of image of America, a kind of vision of the future that is not working really in our favor ultimately. But anyway, I don't want to get in bashing Trump. This is, it's more the point of being realistic about our hopes and being understanding that this is not a 100-yard dash, it's a marathon. This is a long struggle, and it requires very serious looking at fundamental issues and fundamental problems rather than pinning our hopes on very transitory things, including even the election of one particular person.
This is a great point. I'm glad, Mark, you brought it back to full focus and full circle, and into sharp focus is what I meant to say. These are points we have made routinely leading up to the election. that our people are eternal, our people are bigger than Trump, our civilization is larger and more important than a single election and a single president.
But don't give up faith.
That's true. All of that's true. So I think because of the pageantry and because of the drama, we're kind of sucked into this this one instance right now with the Trump versus Biden kerfuffle. But yes, I mean, our the deliverance of America, the reclamation of America's destiny, is not going to come with Donald Trump. I am only saying that he is far superior to the alternative. We don't have, this is a point we made, I think, the last show before the election. We don't have the option on Election Day of electing a Mark Weber or a Sam Dixon or any of the people that we regularly feature on this program. We had an option between Trump and Biden. And so Trump is superior to Biden, but this is not the answer long term. And I'm glad that you're bringing that up too, as much as we would like to see Trump prevail, because I will tell you, it will be a very dark winter if Biden does.
Yeah, the other thing I was going to say, though, is that I may be alone in this analysis, but I think most of the problems with Trump stem from Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner is the guy that told him to have the Platinum Plan for Black Americans and the American Dream Plan for Hispanics. And he's also advising him now to fold his tent regarding this election contest.
Well, look, anybody that because would listen of that, to the opinion of his son-in-law shouldn't be the head of his own home, much less our national home. But very quickly, we got to talk about
it. But anyway, I think that I think he's finally figuring out that Kushner is not his friend, and that would make him better. But like I think we all agree, Trump is not, you know, God himself. He's not the second coming of Jesus. He's not going to set everything right with the world. But on the other hand, his opponents are really bad news leftists, Marxists, who are racist against white Americans, and it's very important that if we can, they aren't in office.
Well,
Mark,
I want
to final analysis to you.
Just one final note, and that is the next 4 years are going to be a very bumpy ride for whoever's in the White House, including Joe Biden. You know, it's very hard to make predictions, as Mark Twain says, especially about the future. We may face another economic downturn like the recession of 2009 or 2008, even on a larger scale. We may have a big war. Joe Biden cannot possibly fulfill the pledges he's making. He's promising to root out what he calls, what his supporters call, systemic racism in American society. That's not going to happen. It can't happen. He's going to unite America. That's not going to happen. He's about the last person in the world to root out anything from a system, given that he's been his entire lifetime a pillar of the very system that he says needs.
I saw a bumper sticker the other day that you might be interested in. It said Harris 2021.
The point is the problems now are, and this is, I think, both Democrats, Republicans, Independents, everyone realizes that the trajectory of America is a very bad one. The year 2020 is an alarm bell for everyone. We've had huge violence unpunished across the country during this year, and no one seems to be able to deal with it in any intelligent or comprehensive way. Not even Donald Trump. Nobody seems to be able to do that. People are worried. Many people voted for Biden with the idea that he would, a Biden presidency would make violence less likely. I don't believe that's true, but that's what millions of people think. Other people, but anyway, the point is the problems are now so bad, and the view of the future by Americans across the board is a very gloomy one for understandable reasons. And we have to look and understand what the fundamental problems are and the trajectory that's been bad and very harmful that's been in place for 50, 60, 70 years has to be reexamined.
You're certainly going to have an awakening to racial realities, and you're going to have to get real. You're going to have to be honest, no matter how uncomfortable honesty may make you.
And see, racism, as you were talking about, is part of the problem here. They would say that all the mail-in balloting is to correct a systemically racist system, which somehow undercounts or gets under-participated in by blacks.
Well, one more thing, Mark, is the fact that right now in the streets of Washington, D.C., just where hours prior you had the March for Trump, the streets have totally been taken back by Antifa and Black Lives Matter. I mean, it's totally there. Well, you know, with Trump in the White House, they've ceded the nation's capital yet again, even tonight.
With, when a society is falling apart, whether it was in the last years of the Soviet Union, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Ottoman Empire,
the Roman Empire,
people tend to think in terms of some tweaking, some variation of what's already in place. Very few people, even when empires are falling apart, are able to see beyond the existing system, that something new will emerge. If I try to encourage people to look at North America as if there is no United States of America, no Canada, no Mexico, where would people if they could do anything or write the borders the way they want, where would they write the borders? Is there anyone today who was to reconstitute some new country would include Puerto Ricans as American citizens, for example? It's crazy. The country already is sort of fundamentally divided just by the reality of different ethnic, cultural, different groups across the country. And trying to unite that is trying to stitch together back the Soviet Union or Yugoslavia or other multi-ethnic states that have already fallen apart.
Mark, you're a fantastic guest. You're a fantastic friend. I hope you live 1,000 years, and I hope that we'll have good news to report the next time.
If he does, he's voting Democrat.
I'm not voting Democrat. Okay.
We'll be back. Thank you, Mark.